Hey everyone, we are still in season 3 of Trail Culture, and it's been so fun to get to know some of the international personalities who came out to race Ultra Trail Cape Town at the end of November. We have a fun lineup of guests in the next 2 weeks, and for the nerds out there, great news, Trail Science episodes are back. Now recorded with Dr. Simon Duvall, he handed in and defended his PhD a couple of weeks ago, so he is officially a doctor and our faithful Trail Science episode co-host. Very, very stoked for him. As usual, special thanks to Carbon Endurance for making the podcast possible. They're a performance consulting house that is a destination to visit for new ideas on products and nutrition that supports the endurance space. They've got some great new products out on their website, including ice bandanas and core body temp sensors that are perfect for the summit training block. I hope you all enjoy the episode, and thanks for tuning in. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Trail Culture. We are still in season 3, and I'm stoked to welcome an athlete who lives in one of the most beautiful places in the world. I've had the joy of visiting once for a very short period of time, but Nora Seres is from Isfjorden in Norway, and she joins us on the podcast today. She's an athlete for Terex and is also busy with her PhD. She is managing to do the running, training, PhD juggle quite well, and I look forward to hearing more about it. This is a friendly face at any race start. It seems like she has a musical talent as well and a love for the mountains. So it's great to welcome you to the podcast today, Nora. I'm really looking forward to our chat.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
I think, Nora, I reached out to you. It was a couple of years ago now, which feels crazy, but on I sent you the classic Instagram DM, and I just remember kind of watching you come onto the trail running scene, at least from, you know, through the eyes of Instagram, and just loving the light and the energy that you brought to the space. And I think I just messaged you somewhere along those lines that was inspirational for me to see. And yeah, it was nice to meet you briefly, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago in Cape Town. But you were recently in Cape Town for Ultra Trail Cape Town and with the Terex team. Was that your first time in South Africa, Nora? And what were the impressions for you?
First of all, thank you so much. I think it's a strange world of living your life and also having part of it on social media, and how you never know when you kind of throw it out into this void, who is actually seeing it and how it's actually being perceived or how it's maybe impacting other people. And it's really nice to know that, a friendly, positive face is being welcomed. So that was really kind of you. Mm. And I remember that DM. I remember thinking, I'm just starting out running. Like, well, who am I to be somebody that's inspiring? Why does my joy matter? And I think, it was really nice. I remember that. So
It's good to see. Yeah. And then I think I was inspired by your garden as well. We were talking about, I think you had an excess of mint leaves or something. It was such a funny back and forth. And I just love to see that outside of running, there's a passion for gardening and something around the house. I think that's very nice.
Yeah, absolutely. We have since moved these mint plants into pots, so they're not completely taking over. So
taking over everything, yes.
Exactly. But fast forward to being in Cape Town for the first time. I absolutely loved it. I've already decided I'm coming back next year.
Oh,
so
lovely.
I was just really, I think, you hear about Cape Town and UTCT and its trails and how they are relentless, but they are also beautiful and you just have to go to experience them. And that was definitely true. Like, I feel like it lived up to both the hype and also maybe kind of the curiosity or the wonder it instilled in me as well. You all who live or have been in Cape Town around that time when all those Watsonias are in bloom, or, you know, when you've got a great day and the light hits just right. And I think really getting to experience those moments that are so uniquely Cape Town is really something special. So,
catching up with your teammates who live in Cape Town, I'm sure it's nice. I think last week I chatted to Charlie Hamilton, and he was saying he would love to do a world tour and visit everybody. And he mentioned you in Norway. He's like, I'd love to go there. So I can imagine it's always fun to visit the home of one of your fellow teammates.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is something unique about being, you get quite close with your teammates, because when you are together, even though you are coming from all around the world and maybe a different kind of everyday or routine at home, these concentrated periods of time with each other, where it's also a time where people have worked quite hard to be there for kind of this one event, and you kind of put a lot of heart into it. And I think being in a situation where you're close with people that you can share all of your excitement and joy and nerves and maybe hesitations and those kind of conversations that get you quite close. And through all of the, you know, deep talk, we also, there's a bit of banter, and then you always get this, like, oh, you've got to come over sometime. And I think it's fun. We've had a couple of teammates visit as well before, and looking forward to hosting more. So I think, yeah, it's just really something nice. And so, yeah, Charlie told me he was in Norway without telling me before we even met. And I was like, well, you should have just told me anyway that you were there.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
And I mean, Laura, you really do live in one of the most beautiful outdoor playgrounds, I think. When I was in Norway, I don't know how close this is to where you stay, but I visited friends in Stavanger, and then we went to, is it Lacey Fjord, one of the fjords with the like pulpit rock, and that's, I mean, it was hands down one of the best trips I think I've ever done, and I really enjoyed the time there. But did you grow up in Norway, Nora? Is that where you've spent most of your life?
Yeah, so I'm so glad you got to experience that part of Norway. That's really nice, and it's quite far away from where I live, but I just live on the fjord but up the coast.
Okay.
Quite a bit, so we have a bit more, I guess, some areas, because we live right at the end of the fjord, it's a bit more sloping into our actual town. But we've got the fjord, waterfall fjord vibes as well. So I'm glad you could experience that. But yeah, I actually, so my mom is Norwegian and my dad is American. So we lived in Norway until I was about 6 and then moved to the US. And so I did my school years in the US, and then for summer and for Christmas vacation, we would go to Norway.
Wow.
And for the summers, it was like my mom putting us, my brother and I, on the plane. And then we'd spend most of the summer with my grandparents who are living in Norway. And but I never had a kind of a mix of my identities until, university. But it was like I spoke English and did only English things and was 100% like, you know, American when I was in the States. And then when we were in Norway, it was as soon as you got to the plane on the airport in Iceland on the way to Norway, it was like only Norwegian, only doing Norwegian. So I never really had this mix until later on.
Yeah, I can hear the slight American accent coming through. It's like an interesting mix, yeah. And I mean, then you went on to study university in the States as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so our winding way towards my love for the outdoors. When I was growing up, we went to Norway, but it wasn't like, we have a family cabin there that is lovely and in the woods, but I wouldn't say we have like an especially outdoorsy, sporty family at all. And I actually went to university in Minnesota in the States for music. So I went on music scholarship. And when I was growing up, I did not do any sports. I was in symphony orchestras.
Wow.
So that was kind of my sport. So I joke that like all of my VO2 max comes from playing the oboe, because probably did.
Yeah, yeah. So, you can sustain a breath for a very long time. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went to the university, or like St. Olaf College, it's called, in Minnesota. It's a small liberal arts college. And I went there, on music scholarship. College in the States is quite expensive, and that's a reality. And I think it's, I was able to get scholarship through music to go, and so I went.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And Nora, I mean, you played for the symphony and did how did the that transition from being in the music space studying music now lead? Because I believe your PhD that you're currently working on is a combination of kind of your musical background and now trail running. And so that intersection is super interesting for me. Could you share with us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. And it's funny how things find a way of weaving themselves together after a while, all these threads in our lives. I went to school for music, and then I was also interested in psychology and neuroscience, so I studied those things at university. And then I did a study abroad, actually in New Zealand at the University of Otago. And I arrived a bit early and I left a bit late and just totally loved my time there. But during that time, spent a lot of time outdoors, camping, hiking, not running yet. And now looking back on it, like hiking the places where, my friend and teammate Ruth, where she's running, I'm like, I was there, 10 years ago, and I did not own running shoes at that point. So I think it's or like trail running shoes, I didn't have. Yeah, so it's quite funny to reflect on that. But I ended up going to New Zealand and just really falling in love with that. And then kind of also in a time where you are, I guess, forming who you are to become when you start to choose what you fill your time and your energy and where you put it. And so I came back from New Zealand just really craving more, I guess, of that in my life, still doing symphony orchestra. But then when I finished up that, I guess, like the outdoor space had started to take, form a bigger part of my everyday.
Wow. Oh, that's amazing. And I mean the how long ago was that, Nora? 10 years?
10 years ago, yeah.
Okay. And so then when did the kind of trail transition happen for you? I mean, yeah, was it just like you started to become more active or I feel so often it's like you meet people who that's their hobby and then that's kind of at least that's how I got into running. I just made friends with runners and then it just kind of happened to me.
So I guess for running in general, I had a friend in college. So I finished my bachelor in 2016, and this year my friend, a good friend, like was like, we should sign up for a half marathon. And I was like, that is ridiculous. People don't run that far. That's crazy. And so, but her and I, we made it a point to run 3 days a week. And I still, somewhere on my little iPod shuffle, I made playlists with like one song, two songs, three songs. And then I challenged myself to like run for the entirety of the whole playlist before I
Oh,
could walk.
wow.
So like this was my start
I love
into
it.
distance. So I remember like, and even the playlist that I had with the most was like eight songs. Like that's, from that perspective, that does not get you that far. But I was just like, and I remember we had run, I think the longest training run that we did was, like 15 kilometers.
Wow.
And then we were going to do this half marathon. It's the longest I'd ever done. And I was like, oh, this is going to be crazy. And we ran and we chatted, and it was just kind of this standard. But I did that once. And then, when I finished my bachelor, I ended up getting a job. I worked in healthcare consulting in the United States. So I actually had a brief stint working in corporate America. And in that time, I had moved to Minneapolis for work. And now it's kind of a given that every big town has a or city has a community-run club. But at this time, they were just starting up. And I actually joined a group with pushing. I have a friend as well who, I guess all of this time, I have a close friend who I work with who has a variety of developmental and physical disabilities. And so I actually started running regularly with him, pushing him in a wheelchair.
Oh, wow.
And then, so we signed up for our first marathon together, and that was my first marathon was with him. So, so I guess my running kind of started together with him.
in a team called My Team Triumph in the United wow. States, as well as in parallel with the Mill City Running based in Minneapolis. So I found these two communities and started running. And then it wasn't until Norway that I found trail running. But so I started jogging with them. And I did that for 3 years and just loved it. And yeah, I guess that kind of cultivated my love for the community in sport and that importance of, how much it gave me when setting me up for the rest of the day and the week and just kind of my energy and how I approached, life, to put it really simply, was really nice. And then I moved to Norway in 2019. I realized that I wanted to continue with my education, and I really did love my job in the States, but just I was given an opportunity to kind of lead a 5-year project, and I realized that this was one of those moments where either I commit to this corporate consulting life and go into this 5-year project and really, kind of go all in on the consulting world, or I take a step back and get my master and go to Norway to do this. Yeah. And then, here I am. So that's how that happened. But I moved to Norway in 2019 and had realized that this kind of social running 3 to 4 times a week was really, really meant a lot to me. And so I found a group in Norway, a student running group, and I was super excited to join. And they ran 3 times a week, and I showed up, and they, I guess at that time, like volunteer coordinator coach guy who was another student was like, "Oh, what's your 10K time?" And I was like, "I usually jog a 10K in like 50 minutes. And he's like, "Okay, go in this group." And I thought it was going to be a walk jog. And it turns out in Norway, you usually only meet up for group training if it is interval training. I did not know what interval training was in running. And so I remember him being like, "It's going to be 6 by 6 minutes or 4 by 6 minutes or something like that." And I was thinking like, walk jog, no problem. And we took off at a speed I probably had never asked my body to run at before. Wow. And I was so tired and I was so intimidated. And I remember being alone in my little sparsely furnished apartment, just moved to Oslo, and being like, "Nora, you have to make friends. You have to go back.
You have to go."
I was so nervous.
Yeah.
I have to meet these people again. Like, I have to give it another chance. And, I guess that turned into finding out, I think it was July or August or something of 2019 was the first time I moved in June, but then joined in July, August, and that was my first interval session. I clocked my first interval session on my watch.
That's amazing.
So that was a hefty start.
And it's a relatively new journey for you, this running kind of path that you're on.
It is. Yeah, I guess I've always enjoyed running, and my dad, I think it's quite interesting now to look back on it. My dad trained for the Boston Marathon 3 times when I was younger. But it was never really, we went and we saw the race and that was really cool, but I think it wasn't so ingrained in, like, we never saw him go to train. He always trained at work, and looking back, it's incredible that he juggled it all. But I guess it was, always just kind of like, I really like to run, and I like to run with my dad, and we ran a bit, jogging around, but I never had this, it wasn't like, of course you're going to go into competitions for a high school sport or something like that. But I just, I just really, I think, we found each other in a way.
That's so cool. And Nora, your current research, can you, just for interest, like kind of an overview of what you're busy with and maybe your title? I know there's different rules about how much you can talk about your research at different institutions. So just within the constraints of what you can share with us, I'm curious for the listeners to hear this intersection of music and running that you've found.
Yeah, absolutely. So I work at the University of Oslo at a collaborative research center with the departments of psychology, informatics, and music. And so I guess the
title of the center is the Center for cross-departmental research in rhythm, time, and motion.
Wow.
This encompasses everything from researching like movement and feelings within live concert research, building robots, researching patients with ADHD and brain injury, special populations like musicians, twins, athletes, yeah, anything really that have to do with rhythm, time, and motion, which when you get into it is a lot of things. We often think about rhythm. Yeah, we often think about rhythm as something musical or kind of getting into a groove. But essentially, rhythm is like, it is structure and prediction. It is like it's you have a beat, and therefore, if you have something that fits into a structure, you can then predict what comes next based on that. And so it's like attention and predictive mechanisms that I research on different aspects of your timekeeping and predictive skills that have to do with rhythmic, the centers of your brain that are in charge of your rhythmic sense, and how this connects to your thinking, learning, and problem solving, as we call them, our cognitive skills, like attention and cognitive flexibility and inhibitory control. And then for what I'm especially interested in is now for this next project is how this relates to performance in trail runners. So how your technical skills or your abilities to how your abilities to perform on different race sections and also changes within a race section. So when you go from running on gravel onto that single track,
yes,
how you are changing your both your body movement, your energy expenditure to most optimally perform, and how these kind of boots on the ground within performance motions of our body relate to the toolbox of skills that we come into the race with. So more of like a mapping of the skills that encompass and what is being used when we are trail running, which I think we can all relate to, like, especially when it's during a long race and you're also, there's this like long term, okay, I'm going up this hill. For all of you in South Africa, like in Cape Town, it's like, okay, I'm going up Blockhouse. It's going to take me ish this amount of time. It's this many meters of vert. How am I, you know, you're not actively choosing exactly the how forward leaning your body is or what you're doing, but you're kind of going into it at a pace that you've estimated you can hold up to the top. And we're doing these kind of calculations all the time. We have some sort of sense that it's been ish 20 minutes. We should probably have a gel. But we're also coordinating in micro timing to move our feet and our bodies in a way that keeps us moving forward as much as possible in the best way possible. While also, like, you're taking in information about there's a rock there, there's a branch there, there's I have to move my body here, and predicting these and also being flexible and reacting to the environment quite quickly. Say that rock that you stepped on rolls, how are you then adjusting quite quickly? And how is this related to the timing mechanisms in our brain?
Wow. And that's interesting, because I think a lot of the when you talk to people after they've run a race, the word like rhythm actually comes up relatively frequently. Like, oh, I struggled to get into a rhythm initially, and specifically Cape Town, the trails are very diverse, so there's different challenges for different sections. But then if you talk to somebody who's run a race that's more like manicured or smooth trails, and even though they could get into a rhythm, there's still different challenges there. So that's so interesting. Is the research something that you've enjoyed, Nora, and is your kind of ongoing experience as a trail runner yourself kind of helping with your research process and just your thoughts as you kind of build out your project?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think both aspects of running and being in the research world kind of help to inform each other. Sometimes I think it is a bit difficult then to say I'm getting a break from work, because it's not ever a break from work.
Yeah.
But I think that For me, I guess there's so many things. I'm working at a university and not at a private institution. So the research is really kind of this. I felt quite privileged in a PhD I got the position and they said, we have funding under a project called INDRA, which is just individual variations of rhythmic ability. Wow. How, yeah, you can perceive that as you will, and essentially build a research project that has something to do under this umbrella and build it. A lot of times in research in the PhD, there's either a set team of people that you will be researching with, or there is a predetermined kind of research question that has received funding that you are going to be taking part of, or even sometimes you receive an already collected massive data set and your PhD is spent analyzing the data to kind of glean results from that. So I feel quite privileged that I can choose exactly what I'm interested in, but it's also quite consuming. But I guess of anything that is, it's not top secret at all, but maybe it is if I'm giving it away. But I think what I'm quite interested in is that I think we give a lot of credit to both our heads and our bodies when it comes to performance and trail running. But I think, I mean, your brain, I'm biased and especially interested, but I've said this to a few teammates and other people in talking with it, but like on a regular day, your brain is using like almost a third of the carbs that you are eating because your brain runs on glucose. So bonking is just as much a cognitive thing as it is a muscular thing. And I think that that's something that we can really learn a lot from in trail running and in technical trails when they are demanding. I mean, we've all felt so tired after a technical race because you're just focused and your attention is on. And I think there's so much to be explored in that avenue of performance. And so this is kind of my first in. And then I guess before I totally neglect it, the other part of my research is looking at how these rhythmic and these cognitive skills also present within a musical population. So my first study was looking at musicians and how kind of which aspects of your timing and beat sensitivity and kind of different technical, like really specific aspects of timekeeping and rhythm present in musical musicians and how this relates to their cognitive skills as well. So I guess this is the second half of how expertise studies. Populations.
That's so interesting, Nora. I think the cognitive demands of racing as well, other than just the technicality of the trail and the focus required there, it seems like as the sport becomes more competitive and popular, there's crowds, competition, kind of decisions that need to be made very quickly and consistently throughout the race. That's also, I can imagine, taxing on the cognitive side. And it's so interesting that you talk now about your brain burning a third of the carbs that you're taking in. It's we do just think about like, what is, you know, what are my legs doing in this moment? But it's also like, are you still able to make those key decisions quickly on a sustained effort? So the kind of 10 plus hours as opposed to just for a 90 minute race and just those differences. Super interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we make so many of these decisions also automatically. Like you just, I think both strategically, but then also just like counting on your body to function and be on, so to speak. Relies on this same engine. So sometimes I like to think, like we oftentimes say, okay, eat the gel on the uphill because it's a bit easier on the stomach. But I also think it's like just as much beneficial to go on the uphill if you are going to have a downhill afterwards, because that requires more attention. So I think recognizing that there's, you kind of need your brain for a lot of things.
And Nora, I mean, speaking of needing your brain for many things, I mean, you are doing the academic and training juggle, which many people are familiar with, and I think is challenging. And how are you finding balancing? I think you mentioned you are hoping to complete the PhD in 2028, so you're in the midst of it, but you're also kind of growing into your role within the Terex team and traveling for racing, and I've seen you travel and crew and do all sorts of things. So yeah, can you speak a bit to what that balance looks like for you?
Yeah, that is a really good question. And I think that I was actually listening to a podcast with Katie Scheid one time, and she said, the balance is that there isn't a balance. It's just a constant, like, you're holding these two things in your hand, and it is which way you are looking at. It's like which hand you're looking at okay. that time, which can be stressful, because when you are putting your focus on one thing, it is quite apparent that you are not putting your focus on the other. Yeah. And so sometimes, like, you have to turn away from one thing to focus on something else. And for me, I have found that, I guess juggling this, I think, is a better way maybe of describing it than balancing it, for in my personal experience of it, because I think recognizing this year, exactly like you said, I think you hit the nail on the head. I am growing into the sport and growing into my role on the team. And I have also recognized that I want to put my energy really into these races and into the team when I get the opportunity to be there for kind of an even, yeah, more concentrated period of time. And then this requires just setting up my research to be able to take kind of a more like step away. So for example, when I was in Cape Town now, my work was more around, I'm finishing up a manuscript for a paper right now. And so being able to work on something in collaboration with somebody else that doesn't require, like, it's editing and it's making decisions about editing, but it is not making decisions on how to complete like data collection on a big project that has I guess you could say more consequential decisions. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it is understanding like decision-making capacities on different timelines that I feel has been really important for me. And another thing that I think I'm still working on but have found that is so important is just kind of advocating for what's important in my life and how to keep that. So when I'm at work, also recognizing how I can work really hard and really well to set myself up and my team up around me to say, and now I will be, you know, logging off for these days because, or not logging off, but kind of switching my attention and I guess asking for permission, or saying that I will.
Yeah. It's like you're very available to your work when you're there. And then in the same way, when you're doing your other work and the trail running, it's like, because I was committed when I was in the office and now I'm committed in the same way to the team and the race that we're at. And yeah, I think that's an important mm-hmm. kind of boundary to have, because it's easy to feel like you have one foot in each place and like you're letting down one of the sides, but it's actually, like you said, you're pivoting mm-hmm. attention, which, yeah, it's a fine line of like, for how long can you focus on the one before you need to return to the other?
Yeah, yeah. And I think research and running are strangely similar. Like they're both fields where you train in a certain way, and like you are following a training plan, and people have different training philosophies, but you are training in a certain way. You're working up towards a race where you are just going to be putting all of your energy, and it is go time, and you have like prepared and you are ready to execute. And this is quite similar to like setting up a research project and the theoretical background that comes with this, and then writing a manuscript and like submitting, like doing this study and submitting this manuscript. So like submitting the manuscript is like, I am arriving at the race and executing the race. And in the academic world, you most often receive a paper back with like a billion edits. And then as soon as it hops in your inbox, you have a certain amount of time to just go all in and edit everything and question all of the choices that you've made on that. And I feel like in running, it's also like you're throwing yourself 100% into a race and it goes the way it goes. And then after the race, you have this kind of like, you know, kind of decompression period where you are like reflecting on the race and wondering how it goes. And then you're right back on the horse and you're running again. And I think because both of these jobs and fields require and demand so much evaluation and reevaluation, and also the willingness to put yourself on the line, I think I have recognized
that I think is what is quite demanding is, yeah, we really put a lot of ourselves into the work that we present, and that happens both in research and in running. And I think owning that, owning that a race can mean a lot to you and that your performance can mean a lot to you, regardless of if you are shooting for a certain time or a placement or a new distance PR. Like, I think it's really, yeah, recognizing how much you have invested in it and how much it means to you, I think can be a superpower during the race, because like, it's a protective mechanism to say, oh, but it's okay, whatever, things can happen. And they will happen inevitably. I think it's like, I heard a quote once that was like, you have to be willing to want it more than you are afraid of it. And I think that, that really stuck to me as well. Like, you can be afraid of something. You can be afraid of disappointment, of failure. But at the same time, recognizing that your want for it to go well is greater than your fear of that disappointment. So regardless, however it happens, if you are disappointed, that you own that as well, because it meant something to you. And I think that's been quite guiding, in my life.
Yeah. And I mean, on that note, Nora, I think it's one thing to run kind of recreationally and to study, but then since joining the T-Rex team, I'm curious how that changed things for you, just with that, maybe the pressure, and despite, I mean, I'm sure there's like a development that you would like to see and the tools to help you, but it's also now like, oh, this is more official. So I'm curious what that experience was like for you. And I believe you joined the team in 2023?
Yeah, 2024. Yeah.
2024. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've been on the team for 2 years, and you're so right. I think it's quite, it brings a level of professionality to it that goes without saying. And when you're then on a team, for me, it was, I started this sport and I just really fell in love with it. And I fell in love with working hard for it. I think, just the grind and the daily kind of putting yourself into that training. I think I really fell in love with that. And when I join a team, it's quite special to be able to share that with a lot of people that are kind of, in the same place at the same time. It was extremely overwhelming as well. And I had moved to Isfiran, which has, as many people know, kind of an absurdly high amount and level of sport for it being such a small town.
Yeah.
And so when I moved there, and I, wasn't friends with these people when I first moved, and now we are friends, which is quite cool. But it's like, I just loved and relished in being absolutely last on the uphill workout train, because I was like, here I am, just like when I am struggling so hard up an uphill, I'm just like, Emily, Henriette, Ida, and Johanna are just like, I just have visualized them in front of me where they always are,
yes,
in the beginning, first saw them. And just like, I don't know, it really, being around people who are better than you really does.
Yes.
For me, really pulls, it really, stokes the fire. And so I think that perspective, I was super excited to start training with them, and it's quite fun. And they are, it's incredible to have so many people that you're surrounded by that you really look up to and are inspired by. And so I'm really thankful for that. And then when I got the opportunity to join T-Rex, it's strange because all of a sudden I was like, lost maybe a bit of that confidence in myself. Or I guess maybe not confidence, but this kind of feeling of the pressure of, oh, shoot, I love it just as much, but now I have to show that I love it, or, through a performance or through something. And I think I struggled with that a bit the first half of the year. And every time I went to a race and it went well, it was like, whoa, what an unexpected surprise. I thank goodness it surprisingly went this way. And then, over time, you kind of realize, like, you have to count yourself in, like, that wasn't a fluke. Like, it happened more than once.
You're putting
it
in the work.
Yeah. So I think that a combination of living where I live and then being able to join Terex and really putting a lot of my mental energy in wanting to show up at those team races and prioritizing those team races. So I guess when I mean team race, it's a race that Terex is like, we would like to have a strong team presence, or they sponsor the race where a lot of us end up at. So when I was at these team races, I think that really kind of bolstered that belief and also that kind of team spirit that I felt really was beneficial to my growth as an athlete. But the adjustment, it is strange. And I think there's this sense of pride as well, that when you're going out and you're running and you get to put on your Terex clothes. And for me, at least, especially in the beginning, it was this kind of scary, but also really fun feeling you know, having this symbol of somebody that believes in your potential to grow as an athlete. And that's really special as well.
Yeah. And Nora, the women that you train with, just kind of locally, that must be an amazing experience, just in terms of even access. You mentioned looking up to them, but access almost to mentorship within the sport, you know, what they've done, what their experiences have been. Do you find yourself in conversation kind of learning from their learnings?
Yeah, it is really, really quite special. And I do. Yeah, I think both in talking through training and racing, also for, you know, advice or hearing things about different races that maybe I would enjoy or that help. But then it's even the approach to a training that when we all show up to. So our town is quite small, and some of us live in like adjacent small towns. But I guess per perspective, like the town that me and then also Johanna Åström and Henriette Albun, like we all live in the same town. It's 1,500 people.
Okay, wow.
And then the town next to us is like 3,500. And then the one next to us is like, I don't know, less than 1,000. So it's not a big place. So when we meet together to do these trainings, they're like neighboring towns, but it's kind of all along the same fjord. And I think for me as well that this mentorship is also kind of, how you tie your shoelaces when you go to a training or when we go to do, like I think just this level of professionality that people bring to the sport along with this, like, I don't know, I was thinking about it. Ida Nilsson is like so cool and has been in this sport for so long. But I think we often, like, she is, you know, racing Western States as a top 10 athlete in her 40s, but we forget that she was like an NCAA track champion athlete.
Yes.
And like, she was doing this when I was like reading comic books, you know, on summer vacation. This is, it's insane to think about this, you know?
Yeah.
And so just like how her, we've had some track sessions together and just being able to ask her for advice, like about kind of running stride or also kind of this type of, how to approach certain workouts. But then also, you know, all of us together, it's bringing the sport drink to an interval session because it is demanding, or kind of how you approach your training that is both seasoned and routine, but also to take yourself seriously. Like, yes, it is worth it to, you know, fuel this or bring this extra, you know, the small things of we train a lot. It is cold. It is wet. Like, instead of just putting on a jacket and going home, like taking that time to just kind of cool down, change into a dry shirt, like those small things that aid in recovery or setting yourself up or approaching the training as a job, I think have really, without words, really helped me to approach training as something that matters. Yeah,
so it's like a longevity that they're helping you kind of build in, it sounds like.
So it is, it's really special.
And Nora, I mean, the winter, as beautiful as it is in the summer, I think the winter months, it's also in Norway's kind of iconic in that sense and known for its kind of winter conditions. And is that you've been to South Africa, but we have an incredibly mild winter here. And I think that's some of our problem is a lot of athletes train very hard throughout the year. There's no kind of like forced break where you must go indoors or spend less time on your legs, or now you're skiing or doing something different. And how is that experience for you? Is that part of your training? Are you still doing a lot of indoor sessions? Do you find yourself skiing and training in that way?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And yeah, I was always surprised, or how can you say, impressed maybe by all of you guys from South Africa and also New Zealand and Australia, that it's like your winter is the trail running season in Europe, and then you just go home and you just continue to crush all of our winter months.
Yes.
It's wild. And I think I live in a place where people do a lot of skiing, and I as an exception to this, I am learning how to backcountry ski. So all of this like many, many hours out on backcountry skis and spending all day, I am still in this learning phase, which comes with its challenges. And it can be quite isolating actually, because it's kind of the given social activity that you are doing. And all the girls in the winter time as well, they train a lot more together on skis than they do running, it seems sometimes. So I am still working on that, and hopefully one day. But I use cross country skiing as kind of a supplement to aerobic, my aerobic training, and I really enjoy this. And I think over the past couple of years, I've really found, I really do love to cross country ski as a way to get out. And to me, I think having a season that presents, unique challenges with the snow and the temperature, as opposed to a mild winter, I think it challenges you also as well to lean into the training that you're going to be doing in the way that you can. I do a lot of indoor bike training, actually. Okay. I found that to me as well. This really helps. I never thought I would like Zwift, but I really enjoy it. So
that's nice.
I think. And I can imagine though that in South Africa it's such a challenge, because you don't have this natural period of time to reevaluate, kind of like, am I tired because I've just been training forever, or am I tired because of a certain aspect or element of my training needs to change? And I think people do train a lot, like in Norway in the wintertime, those who ski, like I live together with Petter, and he is like, 6 hours on skis is a totally normal training day. And like a 6 hour run is quite a big run. And so for those who are skiing, it's that length of an effort for many, many days of the week.
Yeah.
And so I think it presents its own challenges just with the volume, but even though you're out and maybe you're not working so hard the whole time, but you're still out for a long time. But I do think you mentioned as well kind of these benefits of an off season or a down season, and I think that is so important. Like back to the brain thing and kind of building that stoke for the next year. And building that, building that stoke and building an excitement. And I think sometimes that if we don't have to take a break, we don't take one, because we love doing what we love. But I would say it's important to keep both variety, and then also maybe recognizing something you want to build up to, and that requires kind of gathering energy. Instead of just always assuming that you'll have it.
Yeah. I'm such a fan of bears, and that they hibernate. They focus on eating and sleeping. I just think I love food, and I love the winter months where, you've had all these big goals and you've heat adapted and you've trained and been at races, and then it gets cold and rainy and you can go into your home and the seasonal eating and warm meals and sleeping. I just think it's good for all of us. But it's depends who you talk to. Not everybody, there's a lot of people who love to chase the summer all around the world, but I'm a fan of a just a few weeks of good winter. And I think, Nora, from what I understand, you are a foodie. You like to spend time making good food.
Yeah, for sure. At home, it's all about the baking and the cooking. And yes, this year, the garden was subpar, but just kind of growing things and also being close, having a relationship with people that you buy your local food from. And I think that that's quite nice, and having a relationship to this. And I really find a lot of enjoyment. But before we go over the winter thing, I think I absolutely love it, like, especially where we live.
Yeah.
As we live in a fjord, we actually don't get direct sunlight into our house for like 3 months.
Oh, wow.
So So it's really, I just like 100% embrace it. Lighting the candles, having the wool blankets. Like, I think, to me, this is also important and really kind of fills my cup as well. It's not just resting. I think to me, it's really, I really think it's lovely, and it can be so idyllic when you have the snow outside. So I think it's, for me, embracing this also excites me to chase super hot summer races as well.
Yeah. And Nora, I just love, we spoke briefly before the interview started, but watching the videos that you or Peter put out of your two cats walking through the snow, like, I had taking them on their breaks to go outside. It's so sweet. And it's just the winter wonderland, looking at that, just, it's really beautiful.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. We have two cats. For those of you who don't know, they're amazing. I'm really not a cat person, but we got these cats and I love them. And they're a bit like cat dogs, which maybe is why I love them so much. But
yeah,
they go outside on walks with us. And actually, sometimes we will go on like a short little night cross-country ski, and they walk alongside us.
Oh, wow.
And follow us, like walking on the cross-country tracks.
They are like little dogs. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's so weird, but we really love it. And so, yeah, we find a lot of enjoyment out of this as well. And
what
I think
their
this
names,
helps.
Yeah. What are their names?
Yeah, we have Nimbus and Muffins.
Oh, that's so cute. Muffins.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, they also have a half-active Instagram account, which is quite fun. So, yeah. We have become those people, and
love it. Document
such
them
a joy.
Yeah, it's too good. And Nora, I mean, we've talked now about the juggle of research and training and joining the T-Rex team and the travel that's required. How and then wanting to spend some good time at home. But how do you plan your kind of race calendar? How has that changed since you've joined? I mean, now that you've been 2 years in, next year going into your third year, I mean, I'm sure you have to consider the demands of the PhD, but then also wanting to be present and to test yourself against different courses. Let's talk about 2026. How have you kind of, if you've given it thought yet, I'm not sure, or if you're still kind of recovering from the 2025?
That's a really good question. I think being part of Team T-Rex has helped me to structure a bit my season as well, because we do have a certain set of events that are prioritized or offered. And I think that for me, this kind of helped to have potential, highlights in my calendar. And then looking at the course profile and looking at the distances there, and then how that would fit me, and then how that also fits within my timeline of the research and data collection and different aspects of kind of the workflows of research from, theoretical to paper manuscript completion. And so for me, I tend to make sure, this is back to your comment, but kind of making sure now that I was racing through November almost, and I ended up having kind of a heavier September to November with a lot of local races. I raced, yeah, both uphill and road and trail races in the fall that I am not jumping at the bit and finding a race in February. So kind of making sure that I'm starting in, yeah, April or May for a race, just to feel like I have enough time to both digest and decompress from the season that was, and building up a good, I guess, training block, but then also kind of that stoke and that hunger for and curiosity for the next race. So yeah. I'm looking at a few different races potentially in May, whether I am at Transvulcania or going to Innsbruck, finding out kind of, yeah, something in May. And yeah, in April, I would like to do something a bit shorter, just to find something in around Scandinavia, but okay. That's not so easy.
Yeah. And Nora, do
the last time I did a race, yeah.
Oh no, sorry, the last time you did a race?
The last time I did a race around that time was on snow and ice, so I'm not sure if I'm like excited for that again.
Yeah, Nora's like, maybe something more less technical in that sense. The ice is something else. I laughed this actually a year ago. I spent some time in Canada, and my Canadian friends were all laughing at me. They said, it's so obvious to them that me and my family don't understand ice, because we will just walk and they're like, can you not see that that is very slippery? And we're like, oh, it just looks like ice. And then they were explaining the different types and what the different snowfall means and the conditions of the road. And it's just because for me, it's just snow and ice. It all looks the same, but there are differences, I've been told and I've seen.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. Yeah, it is. It's really, there's good snow and there's not good snow for running on. Yeah, that is so fun. Yeah.
And Nora, do you and Peter try and have some alignment in your race calendars to do the same races? Or is there a preference that if one of you's racing, it's better to have the support of one another than to both race? And yeah, how do you guys work out that dynamic in your home?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think, I guess like a short shout out to Petter. He's just so, it's really cool to get to be together with somebody and to like do life with somebody that really inspires you. And that really, I guess also I could consider kind of a mentor in many ways. I really look up to the way that he approaches his training and racing, and like, yeah, I think he has both a lot of experience, but he's also quite thoughtful. Eric spends a lot of time, thinking about a lot of different aspects of training and racing, and this is really, really quite cool. I also think he's a doer, so he's just like, yep, I'm doing this, I will do it, and he gets so much done in this because of this.
Yeah.
And so when we look at these kind of training and racing aspects, there are maybe a few times where we consider that this person is, you know, the support there, or especially if it involves crewing, is really special to be able to share and to support in that way.
Yeah.
But then also recognizing that if there is a race that's like the same day or the weekend after, and you're really chasing that as an individual, that doesn't come in the way. I think we feel good about that, we and understanding that we can support each other in those different ways. But I think one thing that I recognized this year as well was that we completely misaligned our racing calendars. And apart from, there were two races, I guess. But other than that, it was not the same. And I think we kind of recognized that that was a bit too hard as well. Like it's...
Yeah.
I would like to be sharing some of those experiences together. So
yeah, it's a lot of time spent.
It is tricky.
Away from one another and traveling, and then this one's in America and this one's in South Africa, and yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, exactly. And also the town that I live in is like a 5-hour train ride from the university, so I guess that's part of the balance thing as well. I work from home a lot of the time instead of going into the university, partly to protect kind of my energy and my like how I'm working and balancing the training and the work. And so working from home often, but then for example, right now I'm at the university and then I'm away for 10 days. from home as well. And so, yeah, it does take a toll. So I think recognizing that we would like to be where together when we can is important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Have you, Nora, is there any interest from you and Peter to, or just from you to kind of take on a outdoor project, if I can call it that? Like, I think it's amongst the Norwegians, particularly one of your neighbors loves to do crazy expeditions and multi-day things. Is that something that for the future is you're curious about, or yes, is that an exciting idea that's something you've given thought to, or are you happy to just find the balance of running and skiing and research at this stage?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such a good question because we love this sport and we love kind of challenging ourselves. But then when we start training and racing, we're just looking for the next race and kind of the setup, and you get really excited about courses. And I think now, so where we live now is, as you said, it's an amazing place. But I think it's also, we have kind of decided that that's where we want to be. That's where we want to be settled. And I think before that, I had recognized places that I lived as more, I like living here right now, but I never genuinely considered like myself living there in 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
And now we do live in a place where that's kind of what we imagine and I guess want to invest in for ourselves, like in this community. And with that comes then the excitement of wanting to do a meaningful project or FKT. Like, to me, connecting with these mountains that we, while we're drinking coffee in the morning, like look out at every day.
Yeah.
It's more meaningful and more, for me, inspiring. So
yeah,
in Norway, it's quite common to do like a hut-to-hut type of run or walk or kind of connecting different traverses and passages. Yeah. And so I guess I haven't thought of like specific ones, but for me, that's something that I think about, that I would love to do, like a 4 or 5 day, I guess, around a national park or around a fjord.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, we travel so far to run in beautiful places, and I think home deserves some love as well.
Yeah, that's so good. And those huts, I spent one night when we did the field trip to Preikstol, like we hiked and did the hut and then did the walk up to there before then taking, I want to say, was it a train or a bus? I remember going under the ocean. My friends, they were so funny the whole time in Norway. They didn't want to tell us actually what was happening. My friend and I, who traveled to visit them. So they would just take us somewhere, and then there's amazing views of the next thing. It's like you go under, it's like a tunnel under the sea to cross the fjord. And then they would just watch our reactions the whole time. but there was many beautiful things and experiences like that. So the huts, I can imagine that linking them up would just be a fun project.
Yeah, really lovely. And I mean, for anybody who's considering visiting Norway for running, like, I think we have a right to roam, which is like basically that all public land is accessible and you can use it and you can stay on it, just take care of it. And I think that, yeah, it's such a great way to experience the nature that we have here.
Yeah. And Nora, a random question, but just along kind of Norwegian culture and food, is what is your favorite like Norwegian dish? What is something that's quite unique to where you're from that you enjoy?
Yeah, so you've probably tried it, but we do eat a lot of brown cheese.
Yes.
Yeah, it is, for anybody listening who doesn't, that sounds gross too. It's basically just it's a cheese that is made from the caramelized whey of cheese. So like when you make cheese, you basically like churn it and you get these curds, and that's the cheese. And then the whey protein, the whey, they caramelize, and that's brown cheese. And it is so good. Like, Petter and I often will have like a waffle lunch, especially on like a nice, just make waffles. And you can make like heart-shaped waffles in the waffle iron, but we make them with like oats and sometimes protein powder and kind of more of a lunch waffle. Back to also the baking thing. Like we do bake all of our bread and make a lot of, you know, homemade stuff and foraging in the fall and summer. So,
so good.
But yeah, I think the brown cheese is in Norway is one of my
favorites. And Nora, I think this has been amazing. I'd love to hear about your life, your research, your kind of growth into the team and what you're balancing. And I'm excited to follow your journey as you continue into 2026, juggling all these different things. But as a round out question for us, if we had to have this conversation again in 5 years' time, what is something that you would be proud to tell me?
So I love this question because it's a hard question. And I think especially kind of hitting me as I'm at a point in my running and training where now I'm looking forward to a new season and actually in Cape Town, like being with the team really, I don't know, through maybe a series of many small interactions, which is usually how it happened, really felt like, okay, I am really in this team and I am really kind of a part of it, even though it sounds silly to say, and to just like renew my belief in that and my conviction to my goals and my passions within running and also balancing this. And I think hopefully in 5 years when I can look back at this moment, I think to be proud that I continue to like say yes to the things that I love and to also be okay with letting those things that I no longer put all of my energy into, it's okay that those held the purpose in my life for the time that they did. So I think like being proud to have like honestly and full-heartedly leaned into what I realize I want to lean into. And those come with constraints as well, you know, so you have to do certain things to stay alive and independent and, you know, keeping these cats in this house alive and these plants, you know. Quote-unquote adulting things.
Yes, it's all real.
But I think being proud to have really taken the chances that I've been given. I feel extremely privileged and lucky to be able to be a part of a team and to be able to be, to be able to ask questions within the research world that I'm curious about and being able to follow up on them. But I guess like focusing on the running aspect of that, just, it's such unique privilege. And I feel like, what do they say? Like to give it anything less than your best is to sacrifice the gift. This is like quite a cheesy thing, but I think I think being proud that I actually took the chances and opportunities that were given to me instead of getting in the way of myself, like I find that I can do that quite a bit as well. Like, you're not qualified or you're not good enough, for why would you believe that you could make this happen, you're not there yet. And I think I'm starting to really like grow into the fact that that's not, regardless of how it goes, that's not the way that it's going to get you there. Like, you're writing yourself off before you even give it a chance. And I think that that's what I would like to be proud of myself for in 5 years, that I actually took the opportunity and ran with it.
Yeah, incredible. And I look forward to 5 years' time being able to call you Dr. Nora. it's amazing, just the PhD. It's difficult to explain to people who are not in academia what it is to take on a doctorate. I just chatted with my supervisor and good friend and mentor yesterday. He's just done his defense for his PhD, and it's a joy to celebrate with you guys as you hit these milestones. And Nora, I really appreciate your time and hearing some of your story, and I hope that after the 10-day trip, you can go home and enjoy Christmas time in your home and all the little joys that come with spending time in the winter wonderland.
Yes, winter skis and baking and time together. It's really looking forward to that.
Yeah. But again, appreciate your time, and we will be following your story as it continues.
Yeah, thank you so much, and thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's nice to be able to connect with people from all over, and yeah, kind of fun to, I guess, yeah, talk about my story.
Yeah, it's good. Thanks, Nora.
Yeah.